Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Live from the renterswarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Joel, Barry, and Nick till 4, 2 in the books, 1 to go. We've been spanning the globe and spinning it around and around it goes with plenty of running of the gamut of topics to flow from food, bowl games, Texans, Rockets, NFL, all kinds of things.
You had a trivia question.
I do have a little bit of a trivia question. Okay. Who has, what two NFL teams hold the record, first and second place, for most wins in the same building in NFL history, and not together? So what I'm saying is number one, and I'll give you the numbers, number one team has won 217 times in the same building.
In a building.
Right. So okay, essentially, and to give you a hint.
But number two hasn't won in that same building.
Not that same building, but number two had, it was just surpassed last weekend. Number two had 216 wins in a different building.
Okay.
And here's the quinky dink too, but it's not a quinky dink.
Oh.
Okay. Number two and the wins that they've had in that building, they don't play in it anymore.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, that screws it up.
See?
So I know.
Makes you think.
I know one of them has to be the Packers because you wouldn't have brought this up if it wasn't.
That's absolutely right.
Okay.
And why I said you that. That's why I didn't even want to put it on the air. That was
easy.
What I said. Yeah.
That was easy. But number two, I'm sitting there going back, and my first, I'll tell you who I first thought when you said it was the Bears.
That is correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Because my third thought.
I'm giving it away for you.
All right. So it was
but
the Bears.
But here's the kicker.
It was the Bears and the Packers.
Right. Here's the kicker.
But
so
I was
number one.
I was going to say Cowboys was my third choice if the Bears
remember,
wasn't
they
right.
Switched, they switched
I know.
Two. So, okay. So number one is obvious.
Yeah.
Right. The
Lambeau.
Building is Lambeau. Yeah. Right. Number two being the Bears. And our resident Chicago fan had to think long and hard. Most people get this wrong. Name
not
the building.
Soldier Field?
Not Soldier Field.
I don't know. What is it? Tell me.
I'm gonna, but I'm letting you kind of
no. I don't want
contemplate
marinate.
A little bit.
I don't
how about
care
this
if the
one? How about this one?
Chime in.
How about this one?
What?
It's the Friendly Confines.
Wrigley?
That's correct.
Really?
Yes.
I had no idea that
the Bears
play in
being
Wrigley.
The old, you know, the one of the oldest franchises in league history, if not the oldest, played so many games for so many years at Wrigley Field.
Interesting.
That the Bears were at 216, the Packers passed it last weekend, but at Wrigley Field, which is what I really thought was kind of amazing.
Huh.
So there you have it.
Yeah. Somebody texted said the Bowls are a snooze fest. Get rid of the December games and make it a 16-team playoff. Stop it! Stop it right now! I won't stand for this foolishness.
You don't like it because I said 6 to 8 teams and you weren't even
no,
having all
you
that.
Said 8. I said 6 is fine. 8's too many, but 16 is ridiculous. I don't know that. I just no. No. I mean, it's okay at 4. I think 6 would be great, but we don't need to keep adding and adding. 16 is just entirely too many because you're still having the same games. Like, you still have matchups like, you know, Michigan and Florida State, or you're going to have these games where you're going to have ranked teams playing each other in these bowls. You're just calling it the playoffs instead.
Right.
It's still,
yeah, I mean,
you know,
look,
you're still going to have
I still
some
think
matchups
eight
that
teams
are
is going to make sure no one's falling through the cracks. But again, you're never going to have anybody happy. And of course, there's going to be that one year that you have.
Well, yeah. Do you really want to see Alabama playing the 16th ranked team in the
no,
nation?
No, I don't want 16.
Who cares?
I don't want. I mean, I want 8 teams.
Okay.
I think 8 teams is the best way to make sure no one slips through the cracks.
Even then, do you really want to see a team like Alabama playing an 8th ranked team
on any given Saturday? Yeah. I mean, I think that the quality of play would still be there. And here's the other thing. It would eliminate all that time because of the amount of games that would have to be played still. I think it would eliminate a lot of the time between their last game and then the bowl games. I think we could condense that because there's more games to be played.
Now, this wouldn't be because Wisconsin was 8.
No, it has nothing to do with the Badgers at all.
Okay,
no.
Because they, you know.
Completely, and I'm right. being completely
honest.
So if
they were 9, you wouldn't have said 9. No,
this
teams.
Has nothing to do with the Badgers. Right. I'm talking about it strictly from a college football perspective.
Would you really want to watch Alabama whoop that ass on the Badgers? I mean, was that really compelling football for you?
You know what? I'd love to say that the Badgers could compete with them, but I'm realistic. And offensively, their quarterback play has just been awful. But I wish it was somebody else that I could say, yeah. And you know what? At the same time, the Badgers lost in overtime to Ohio State. They played Michigan and lost 14-7. So there were some teams in there that I'd like to see. And we know that, you know, that even from Ohio State or Clemson or Michigan, all in these top 10 ranked teams, for as good as they've been, they've also had that 1 week where they have been less than stellar and really either slipped up completely and lost or were in a dogfight. So, you know, anything can happen. And I think those games are more compelling than some of the bowl matchups you get.
Yeah. I mean, well, up until now, you haven't had that many. But again, the bowl matchups are going to get better the closer you get to New Year's. So, you know, hang in there. We're getting some good matchups now. The schedule is turning around, as they say.
Okay.
The schedule should get much better. Here, let me pull up the who we've got coming up here. Here we go. Bowl schedule. You ready?
Yep, I'm ready.
All right, so we are, what is today, the 29th?
Mm-hmm.
So tonight, there's a good game. Oklahoma State, Colorado.
Yeah, that's a good
game.
That
doesn't do it for you? The Alamo Bowl?
That's a decent game, yeah.
The Valero Alamo Bowl.
Oh, yeah. Don't forget that.
Yeah, right. And then tomorrow, the 30th, you've got Michigan, Florida State.
That's the big one.
I want to see that. Yeah. I also want to see Nebraska, Tennessee. I think that's going to be a decent bowl game. Any interest in Stanford, North Carolina? Okay, I didn't think so.
No.
And then on the 31st, you've got LSU Louisville in the Citrus Bowl.
Louisville.
That's a decent one. And then the playoffs start. You got the Peach Bowl semifinals, Alabama, Washington, and the Fiesta Bowl, Clemson, Ohio State. So we're there. Like we're getting to the good stuff now.
Yeah. I mean, look, but for the most part, until you threw Wisconsin in the mix, I kind of would like to have seen an 18 playoff and see. Let the best team win. Let them duke it out. And again, because that would actually condense the time between the last game that they played and the first, if we call them bowl games or playoff games, that you would see better football too. To the caller's point, Brian, a while back, that just said, look, the quality of play is just, it's been off. It has not been close to what it was during the regular season, and I agree with him. And that's maybe why I'm not as interested in a lot of these bowl games as I would be otherwise, and I don't bet on them. And maybe that would make me more interested in them then.
Oh, I don't bet just because I have horrible luck, and I'm not good at – like if I were to – because I thought about doing this where I'm going to go through and just kind of keep a spreadsheet and keep track of, all right, if I were betting, here's who I would pick and just see my record. And I bet you I would do pretty good, no pun intended. But as soon as I actually start putting money on games, I would lose my ass. And it never fails. I don't win when I go to Vegas. And I have horrible luck. And I really think that has something to do with it. I really do. Like there's a certain amount of luck involved and I have none on my side. None at all.
Yeah. I mean, and I listen, I admire the fact that Fred and AJ go out there and put their butts on the line a lot and talk about, you know, picking games and point spreads and parlays and all the things that they do, because I would just feel like awful.
Yeah.
If I gave people advice and said, you know, I'm going here doing this or you should do this or that, and then they didn't win.
Yeah, I mean, you're costing people money? Hell no. I wouldn't do that at all. A couple of updates. Chris McGowan tweeted me, and you know, earlier we were talking about Instagram and creeping on chicks that are hot on Instagram, and he said, check out Manziel's supposed new girlfriend, Bree Tiesi, I guess is how
She's from some T-I-E-S-I. Show.
T-I-E-S-I.
She's from a show.
So I'm going to go.
I saw TMZ or someone tweeted something that said he's now dating someone from some show.
Okay. So have you looked at her Instagram yet?
No, I didn't look at the Instagram.
All right, I'm going to go check this out and I will report back.
Your boy, Mike the Truth Jackson.
Done. Approved. She's strong.
Oh, is she?
Yep.
Okay. I got to go. But without even looking?
Googled.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Your boy, Mike the Truth Jackson, found your video.
Yes, and I'm about, that was the other update. He did, Mike the Truth Jackson does have video of the Whataburger Challenge, and I just retweeted it. So there you go. You can check that out.
This was the actual competition you're talking about with all these guys trying to do it?
Yeah, and there's pictures of the fat dude that, I think my buddy Connor Hogan brought this fat dude as a ringer, and there's a video of him outside throwing up because he couldn't do it. So, yeah, that's there, too. Now, I don't know if this is safe for work or not. I don't remember. This was a long time ago.
I got the volume down. But okay. You're saying that out of this whole group, four left standing did it?
I think so. Yeah, it was four of us, three or four of us, one of the two, and we all had we all got our man cards that day. There were some man cards that were made for if you finished.
So I also retweeted this so that okay. you guys can see this.
Yeah,
either the Barry through Barry's Twitter account, my Twitter account. Check it out and see. And you can see the Whataburger challenge that has been a topic of discussion today.
Dude, if this is really Johnny Manziel's girlfriend, this Bree Tiese or whatever, I need to be a drunk because, man, you can pull some ladies. This is insane. I don't know this dude. I don't know. He's got – it must be that football money. It's got to be that football money.
I'm glad you said that. So we've got plenty more to get to. By the way,
else?
George Karl issued an apology.
Uh-oh.
Kind of. But then he also was quick to take more shots at more people, including one of his proteges that has been an assistant coach and with him through thick and thin, and even that guy has turned on him now. So we will get to that and a whole lot more with a whole lot more show to go. We are ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Joel, Barry, and Nick till 4. We mentioned the other day about George Karl taking some shots at some of his ex-players and was not too politically correct and not too kind to guys like Kenyon Martin, Carmelo Anthony, J.R. Smith, etc. Now, ESPN tracked him down, coincidentally, because he used to be on the network when he collected an easy paycheck between coaching gigs. And before he went on another run, which, of course, is all promoting his book, too, and helping him, I guess, to some degree, on his ex-assistant coach and basically a guy who he gave a career to in coaching, and Terry Stotts, coaches Damon Lillard of the Blazers. He was not too complimentary of Lillard, and we'll get to that. But the thing is that his protege decided to go back at him and said, hey, if you want to screw up your career, never get another coaching job, and really do a lot of things to make sure you don't work again, that's on you. But before that, ESPN tracked down Coach Karl and got him to somewhat apologize, Nick. Was that, to be fair, to Kenyon Martin and Mello?
Kind of. It was like
it went a little something like this.
Well, there's no question that, and the book has a lot of fatherhood in it, you know, because I had a good father, and I had a father that was a total non-athlete, and somehow along the way, he had to support me in a world that he didn't even know, and he became very well-groomed in the world of athletics because of it, and then I was blessed by going to North Carolina. And then I had a kind of a tumultuous relationship with my son because I was a basketball coach and I was a part-time father. And so I'm sad that the part of it, you know, I said it poorly and I'm sorry that I said it poorly. And I'm sorry for the reaction because I know Kenyon, you know, the one thing I love about Kenyon Martin, he is a good father. And the other thing that I like to say pretty strongly is the one thing that should not ever be represented is I think there are so many great mothers that have come into this in the basketball world, in the NBA world, that have done a fantastic job being that single parent and raising their and supporting their children in a great, great way. I mean, there are some superstar mothers out there.
Yeah, so kind of apologizes, but really, I don't think makes up for some of the things that he
said.
Didn't
even feel like an apology.
No, it really didn't.
Really, it didn't.
And I think it's probably fair. By the end of the segment, we'll recap for you exactly the quotes on Kenyon Martin and Carmelo Anthony. But they were awful. And if you thought Phil Jackson's comment on LeBron and his posse was bad, these were much worse. And then today he comes out and says that the Blazers not playing like the Blazers of a year ago when he looks at the team has everything to do with the blame being placed on Damon Lillard, their best player. And, oh, by the way, coincidentally, Terry Stotts coaches the Blazers, and Terry Stotts was George Karl's big number one assistant coach for years, basically credited with giving him his start in coaching. And the quotes that Carl had was, I was watching the Blazers and I was trying to figure out what the hell's wrong with this team. My conclusion is that Damon Lillard is getting too much attention. He said, I think their coach, Terry Stotts, is a great coach. So I'm going to say the problem is Lillard. They were a together, connected, committed team last year. This year, they're not. What changed? I mean, if you look at their roster, a lot changed. But Terry Stotts knows where his bread is buttered, and he also knows who his best player is. And he had this to say in response to Coach Carl.
Terry, you have any comments on George Carl's comments on
this? As a matter of fact, I do. You know, as you know, I owe a lot to George. I got my start in coaching with George. I wouldn't be here if it weren't for him. He's a successful coach. That being said, if he wants to diminish his chances for the Hall of Fame, if he wants to undermine his chances to being a head coach again in this league, if he wants to settle old scores with GMs or players or whoever else, that's his prerogative. But when it comes to my team and my players, he needs to stay in his own lane. He doesn't know Damian Lillard. He doesn't know how coachable he is. He doesn't know what a great teammate he is. He doesn't know how much Damian cares about winning and how important he is to this franchise. And I thought his comments, however well-intended they may have been, which I don't understand, I can't tolerate.
I give Terry Stotts all the credit in the world. Because here's the guy that basically made it possible for Terry Stotts to make millions of dollars and be a head coach in the NBA. But at some point, you got to draw the line and say, enough is enough, man. And I don't know where the motivation is coming for these kind of comments, but you need to pad the brakes.
Yeah, it's weird. Is this all, I mean, if this was all just to sell books, what a stupid way to go about it.
Remember we were talking about back before with the pyramid schemes, like you would never alienate your friends by giving up all their information? This is like worse, because these are all like, in some cases, these could be lifetime type relationships. Like, I would imagine there's going to be a lot of tension from this point forward between Terry Stotts and George Carl, right?
Yeah. Why do that? Why put yourself in that position? Why put your friends in that position? I mean, you're just going to, and you're sticking your nose into places that don't belong. I mean, for what?
Well, and this is on top of now, remember, his quote on when it regards to Kenyon Martin, J.R. Smith, Carmelo Anthony. Kenyon and Carmelo carried two big burdens. All that money, no father to show them how to act like a man. Mm. And he said, on J.R. Smith, he wrote that he had a huge sense of entitlement, a distracting posse. His eye was always on the next contract and some really unbelievable shot selection. And he followed it up with even more derogatory things about the three of them when they played, including when he said, Kenyon and Carmelo carried two big burdens, all that money, no father to show them how to act like a man. As you've read, I grew up in a safe suburban neighborhood with both my parents. I had a second father in my college coach, Dean Smith, the most moral, decent man I ever knew, and I never made enough money as a player to get confused about who I was. When I compare my background to Kenyon's and Carmelo's, it's no wonder we had a few problems. He went on to say things like, the volume of questions about Carmelo wore me down. Sometimes I got so sick of talking about him, I just throw up my hands and say, I don't know what he is, and I don't care. He also said, he really lit my fuse with his low demand on himself on defense. He had no commitment to the hard, dirty work of stopping the other guy, though he was the best offensive player I've ever coached. He was a user of people, addicted to the spotlight, and unhappy when he had to share it. Kenyon Martin also, if you want to get online and check it out, had plenty to say in response to kind of blast back at George Carl. But again, I'm not even scratching the surface on all of this, because it even got worse when he bundled all three of them together and talked about Kenyon, Carmelo, and JR, and the fact that they were basically fed with a silver spoon through AAU, but they grew up in the hood, they played hood ball. I mean, there was just a lot of negativity. It's like, I don't know what his end motivation is besides trying to sell books, but I do know that from this point forward, he's going to be judged a different way, and I think Terry Stotts was dead on. This could cost him not only future jobs, but it may even mess with his chances to get in the Hall of Fame.
I think so. I mean, well, do you judge a man just solely based on that, though? You can make dumb comments.
Remember when
and still
we talked about
in.
The fact that
Trapp
voters,
was one of the guys that was big on that. He's like, judge on the performance.
Right. Yeah. But remember when you and I, Barry, talked about the fact that these guys out there now that get votes, whether we like it or not, have their own agenda. And we don't know what the actual real criteria is. And you get some of these older writers that get a little axe to grind or don't like the fact that he's gone out and done these things and sold out X players.
I don't think it keeps him out, though. You know why? Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens are getting a lot closer. They're almost to that 75% threshold. So people forget and people forgive and people let things go. And if players from the PED, you know, steroid era are going to start getting in the Hall of Fame, then certainly George Karl will.
I don't know. If you guys want to chime in, let us know. 713-780-ESPN. It's definitely a salty situation, though, because I think definitely crossed the line a few times, and he's definitely ruffled a few feathers.
He might get into the dumb Hall of Fame, too.
Yeah, and he, you know what? And look, a lot of those guys paved the way for a lot of wins that have got him in a position to even be considered for the Hall of Fame, and that's like biting the hand that feeds you over and over again. So we got much more to get to, and we can talk about whatever you want to talk about. Please join us on the show. Hit us up on Twitter, 713-780-ESPN, for calls and for text messages. For Barry and Nick, I'm Joel. We're here till 4, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Joel, Barry, and Nick, as we do it till 4, as we keep rolling along, we just touched on the George Karl situation, which just seems to get messier by the day, with more and more that I guess he's trying to sell books with. But in trying to do such a thing, he is alienating just about everybody that was a positive contact for him in the game of basketball. And that's a shame when you look at it. And yeah. I'm trying to find the full comment that I had the other day that I had on air where, you know, he basically refers to Kenyon Martin, Carmelo, and J.R. Smith as AAU babies that you see the likes of in junior golf or tennis. Spoiled rotten brats. But then he goes on, he uses the term posse. He after he bashes Carmelo, he bashes the fact that Kenyon and Carmelo had no father, and they said that was a huge reason why they didn't understand how to handle their money or themselves. But he just went nuts. And then after trying to apologize, that we played the apology last segment, he then goes right back and starts firing away even more and taking shots at a guy who was his right-hand man for years in Terry Stotts, and the fact that he's coaching Damon Lillard and the fact that the Blazers and the fact that the Blazers aren't winning is their best player's problem, Damon Lillard, who by all accounts, by all people, including Terry Stotts, says not only is he not the problem, but he's a really good dude and a really good player.
Yeah. It's just a mess. I don't know what else to say about it, to be honest with you. It's a mess. And
it is.
I don't know. I think he's gotten enough run that he should deserve, too. Like, all we're doing now, if we keep talking about it, is helping him sell books, which was his goal. I want to talk about something positive. Can I bring up this this bet?
Yes, please.
Do you guys remember when Antonio Brown and Brandon Marshall had a bet? It was to see who would get more yards, wasn't it?
It was who
in this regular season.
It was
right?
Like it was an ego battle back and forth. Who's the best receiver? And they said, "Put your money where your mouth is."
Yeah, and it was a pink slip bet. So it was whoever had the most yardage at the end of the year. If Marshall outgained Brown, Antonio Brown had to give up his Rolls Royce, and if Brown had more yards, Marshall had to surrender his Porsche, is what this article says. So that's crazy. So yeah, right now it's not even close. Brown has
he's up 500 yards,
500 yards more. So this is really cool. Antonio Brown sent Brandon Marshall a tweet, and he said, yeah, at B Marshall, you could send me the pink slip or donate the car to at Project 375. Glad we're both healthy mentally and physically. And if you don't know what Project 375 is, it's Brandon Marshall's, I guess it's his project. It's his company that he's doing. And it says on their Twitter, it says, passionately dedicated to eradicating the stigma surrounding mental health by raising awareness and improving care for those in need. Hashtag I am aware. So it's really cool that he would come up and do something like that and say, you know what, you can give it to me or keep it and donate it to your own, you know,
charitable foundation.
Charitable foundation. That's the word I was looking for. And that's cool, man, because, yeah, if you don't know, Brandon Marshall had issues, mental health issues.
Yep.
I think it was, it's not bipolar. It was a personality disorder, which really caused problems for him.
His relationship.
At the beginning of his career.
A lot of times in his career, he had issues at home, domestic things.
Yeah, on and off
the
field.
And he blamed a lot of it on the fact that he had this mental illness. And to his credit, he came out and was outspoken about the fact that, look, I have this problem. I want to do something about it. And has done such since then, although you might not think that he's continuing to do it if you hear about what happened at halftime of last week's Jets game.
Yeah,
but overall, he's done a heck of a job of righting the ship on and off the field.
Yeah, it's called borderline personality disorder, also known as emotionally unstable personality disorder. And it's, I mean, I just looked it up on Wiki, but it just basically talks about, you know, you have unstable relationships, unstable sense of self, unstable emotions. And a lot of that, you know, describes Brandon Marshall, especially early on in his career. So he started this foundation to raise awareness for it. And I think it's awesome that Antonio Brown is like, yo, man, just donate the car back to yourself and to your foundation. So pretty cool. A good story amongst a bunch of crappy stories that we usually get and talk about, you know, in sports.
And another fun one. Dak Prescott and Zeke Elliott have a little back and forth going, and if you saw this the other day, but during the press conference in the locker room after practice the other day, as Dak was trying to do his press conference, Zeke Elliott got a whole bunch of straws and started drilling him with spitballs during the press conference, and at one point hit him right in the temple as he was answering a question.
Nice.
And the only way that Dak could get him to stop was he reached into his locker and grabbed like this big bag of candy like you hand out at Halloween and said, here, Zeke, take this, just stop. And he did. So Zeke thought he won, thought he got the best of him, shows up for practice the other day. And, you know, besides the locker, they have like these little mini lockers with doors that they keep stuff in. Well, from top to bottom in his locker stall, including inside his helmet, and then when he opened the door of this mini locker, nothing but candy came flying out in those little, like, Halloween small, you know, bite-sized packs.
Yeah.
Everything. And you can hear Zeke going, I hate you, Dak, because it's like they just kept coming no matter what. He grabbed his helmet to go to practice. When he tipped it upside down, all the candy came flying out. It was all over the place.
That's
so
awesome.
Definitely Dak got the best of Zeke out of that deal. That was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. Hey, Sean Sweeney tweeted and said, it sounds like Serena's boyfriend is doing our updates.
Nick is very defensive of that. Now.
I can't even tell you how funny
don't
that is.
Don't talk about my boy.
That's Nick, and he's a good dude.
Go back and podcast the show if you don't know what we're talking about, because I'm not going to rehash the whole thing. Because we're also getting people texting in asking, hey, what's the Whataburger Challenge? What is that about?
Listen to the damn show.
Go back to the podcast. Well, I mean, you know, people are working. You don't know why people can't listen. I'm not going to hate on them.
Now suddenly Barry's protecting and defensive. All right.
No, I'm just saying you don't know why people couldn't make the first or second hour.
I'm with Joel. You listen to this damn show.
So go back to the podcast. Go to podcast.
On time every day.
I'm trying to promote the podcast now.
All right, well, go do your work.
Yeah, go to podcastarena.com. Right, Nick? Isn't that where it's
at? Podcastarena.com.
Can't do it on the website?
That's where
you can go on ESPN975.com as well.
Yeah, you can do 975.com.
But podcastarena.com has, because that's where it's going to take you anyway, so you might as well just go straight there. And you can click on the show and listen, and it'll tell you about the Whataburger Challenge and what all that's about and why Serena's boyfriend is doing our updates.
Don't we get,
get it all? That's your dude, Nick? That's your boy?
Yeah, he works. He's our boy. He works down the hall.
He's a cool dude, man. I bump into him in the hall on occasion. He's a very cool dude. I don't know. Y'all
under one roof, we're all on one team, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What?
We're all under one roof. We're all on the same team.
Where are you going? Because I had just one thing real quick.
Absolutely.
Someone just sent me a message on Facebook that says, now you can drink wine with your cat. Apparently, there's a wine out there that's non-alcoholic, but it has catnip in it that you can put in the bowl.
Sounds appetizing.
And your cat, there's like a Pinot Meow.
Whoa. Like, that didn't sound right.
Instead of a Pinot Noir.
I know that, but it just sounded like it said penal.
No. No. I'm not. No.
Now you're matching up penals with your cat. Anyway. And then we got all kinds of bad things going on.
There's this video of these cats just like getting drunk off this wine. But it's all catnip, I guess. I don't know. But this is definitely
it's called foreplay in certain circles, but you know, whatever. It's one of those deals.
I'm not, yeah. All right. Well, I'm not getting it now. You've made it dirty. I was going to get this for my
After
wife.
You went penal noir, but I made it dirty. Okay.
I was going to get this for my wife so she could have a glass of wine with her cats. But
if
not
she's listening right now, she's ticked off because now your New Year's plans are all thrown up in the air because you're going to get this wine with the cats and you're going to get bombed.
No. You've ruined this for me now, Joel. I hope you're happy.
Yes. Yes, indeed I am. And also, by the way, hey, the inventor of the Red Solo Cup died at 84 years old.
What?
Yeah. A staple at most parties that we've been to in our lifetime.
Mm.
Even songs about it. Was that Toby Keith? Red Solo Cup.
Yeah.
Robert Leo Hulsonen, who worked 60 years at Solo in the company that was created by his father, is fully credited with creating the Red Solo Cup, dead at 84. Add him to the list that, damn that 2016.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, they got a new one now. It has like a little indention at the bottom of it, so you can turn it around and put like a shot in it. So
really?
It's evolved.
Wow, that's still fancy.
Nick is still getting to house
parties. I know, look at you.
Yeah.
You know why? You don't get sucker punched at the food truck at house parties. That's why.
Hey, before we go to break, you, Mike, you can stop texting the show. I'm not going to read them. There you go.
Ever again, by the way, Mike. We've
Ever.
Been told.
You can
Ever.
Stop. He sent like 100 of them today. Not happening, homie. Move on.
Yeah, aside from being a small guard in the lane with Dikembe Mutombo, and aside from being blocked and getting the finger, you're getting another finger, Mike.
Yeah.
Just letting you know.
Just move on, dude.
All right, we got one segment to go. We got still enough show. If you want to get involved, 713-780-ESPN. You've been doing a great job hitting us up on Twitter. We're here till 4. It's Barry, it's Nick, it's Joel, and we are here at ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Joel, Barry, and Nick, as we do a little re-gifting, we're about to wrap this one up and put a bow on it, and you guys can send it to whoever you like, either via podcast or the website. But if you missed some of it, there's some good stuff on here today. I think we more than made a valuable show out of a tough week to find show content sometimes because everybody's on vacation. But there's still more to go because, Barry, you got a Big Ten band member.
Yes.
Who can kick some serious pigskin.
Yeah, this dude, I guess he's a trumpet or trombone player. He, Austin Breezy.
One time at band camp.
A junior who plays in the Ohio State Marching Band. Bet a friend that he could make a 55-yard field goal, and they bet like a burrito or something. I don't know. And so he did. Like, he nailed it. And it wasn't even close. In fact, I'm retweeting it right now. At Barry is funny. Go check this out. This dude nails this 55-yard field goal. And with some room to spare. Like, this is in, I guess, their practice facility. And he lines it up, and he knocks it through. And when it goes through, there's this back wall behind the field goal, and it hits that. So he had...
He had a little distance.
He had more. I mean, he probably could have made it from 57. And so he nailed that. And then they tweet to the... athletic, I don't remember the name now. Oh, yeah.
You can call it the Ohio State Athletic Department, I guess. I mean, that's fair.
Was it? Yeah, but they were like, do you need a kicker? And he was like, not for Saturday, but tell him to get in touch with me. We'll try him out. Like, now this dude from the band has a open tryout for next year to potentially be a place kicker for the Ohio State Buckeyes.
Somewhere Randy Bullock just wiped his brow, put his knife and fork down, and went, thank God that dude's not in the NFL.
No, somewhere Randy Bullock went like, what, they're betting kicks for burritos? I'm in.
That too.
Dude, I'm in. Maybe that's the key. You got to bet him a burrito, and he'll make it.
That's, well, I said crazy. He would have made that kick the other night if there was a buffet underneath the crossbar.
Yeah, he said that.
I did say it on the air.
That is true.
Yeah. And then... scanning the globe of non-sports stories and sports stories that make you go, and also take notice. We got a little Jeopardy.
Yeah, there was a Jeopardy question. And we have the audio for this, right?
We do.
There was a Jeopardy question where they asked the guy to name the... Well, just play it. I think it's got the question, right?
And it does.
As part of, okay, just play the audio. Listen to this.
In a true daily double.
For 4,000 then, here's your clue. It's the only Pac-12 school that does not contain the name of a state.
All right.
No, I'm not going to play the answer. Yeah, so.
The only Pac-12, we're going to see if Joel can get this. Mm-hmm. The only Pac-12 school to not contain the name of the state.
Stanford.
Easy. Look at that. Easy as pie. Now listen to this.
And I did not know the question ahead of time.
Listen to this.
Was Auburn? Pac-12
University. Now, no, what I like, if you could back it up a little bit, my favorite part of that is if you hear Alex Trebek's reaction, he goes, oh no. Like, what, you stupid ass? Listen.
That does not contain the name of a state. Was Auburn? Oh no. Pac-12 Stanford University.
Oh no. University. Oh, you went no. all SEC on us.
Yeah. Oh no, idiot. That's not
Was
even.
Was Auburn? Oh no.
I love it. That's so funny, man.
And by the way, we didn't touch on this a while back, earlier in the week. But the other thing on Jeopardy that I thought was pretty amazing was there was a girl that went on a run right around the holidays, right around Christmas, from Austin, Texas, named Cindy Stowell. And she was drilling it, right? She won, I think, 6 days in a row, won $103,000. People were like following her, checking it out, trying to figure, you know, and all of a sudden the word started getting out. By the time the shows aired, her lifelong goal of being on Jeopardy was fulfilled right before she passed away.
Oh, God.
And it was just devastating. And it got to the point where Alex Trebek actually went on and did a little in memory of after she passed to tell the story. And one of the things that she had said, she ended up winning $105,803. And she indicated she wanted all of her winnings donated to the Cancer Research Institute, according to her boyfriend, Jason Hess. And that was done. And the guy that ended up beating her also said, I can't say it any better. What they did for Cindy was amazing. The people at Jeopardy are beyond first class. Because of the fact that Jeopardy honored her, they still went through it and aired the shows. And they want to make sure that they pay proper tribute and do the right thing for her. But it was just so bittersweet because you see this girl that's succeeding in her dream of being a contestant on Jeopardy, and then the end result is so sad that,
man,
yeah, she's passed away, and all the money that she won is going to be donated to the charity of the disease that killed her, trying to beat it. So it's just that was a crazy story. I forgot to mention that earlier in the week.
That would be weird if you knew that watching it, knowing that this person, because it's they're all pre-recorded,
right?
So really, when you're watching it, she's already passed. That would
And she wins 6 days tragic. In a row, and you're just sitting there going, man, you know, you don't want to use the term, she's killing it. I mean, she was like unreal.
Yeah,
I mean, she was just blowing people away. And then you find out this, and it's just like you just kind of go step. It takes your breath away. You step back and just, wow.
Yeah, it kind of puts things in perspective, man, when you hear stories like that. You're like, question. Yeah, well, I guess we know what's important, right?
And with it being the holidays, too, it really does. And again, another topic that's coming up, because it's very pertinent to what's going on in the next 24 hours, you guys who are very much MMA connoisseurs and UFC 207's right around the corner, you guys wanted to touch on a couple of things with that, so I turn it over to you.
Yeah, UFC 207 tomorrow night. Are you buying it?
I am probably going to watch it, but I'm not going to buy it. I'll probably go to like a
bootleg?
Bar or a friend's.
How dare you?
Maybe.
No, you're lying. You wouldn't bootleg.
Never.
That's illegal, and we don't condone those types of things.
No, I'd probably go to like a, you know, like a, something like a
Nick's place.
Buffalo
is Nick's place going to have it?
Yeah.
What are you looking at me? I'm not John Granato. I don't live there.
Actually, producer Joe George just walked in and said, hey, you want to go watch it at Nick's place? He literally came in
like 2 seconds ago. Look at that.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. All right. So you were going to say something
else. God love Joe George, by the way.
Yeah, but Ronda Rousey, highly anticipated return. It's been, a year layoff, I want to say, maybe a little bit more.
About time.
Yeah. Yeah, about a year, if not a little more.
That kick to the head just rattled her, man.
Dude, that was almost career ending. I mean, she talked about quitting. She talked about suicide. It affected her. You know, that's the problem, man. When you aren't losing, I mean, she's, you know, gold medal judo. Like, you, when you aren't used to losing and you lose like that, and it was humiliating.
Absolutely.
And it you know, it devastated her, obviously, mentally and emotionally. So, and she's back. And I don't know what your thoughts are, but I'll tell you, I think, and I, you know, as much as I've watched and covered the sport, ring rust is a real thing. And you can discount ring rust all you want, but if you haven't been in there, because it's different from training. In training, you train, you know, people work on their cardio and they work on technique and they work all that. But that adrenaline, when you get in that ring, you're either going to have an adrenaline dump or you're going to be hyped up and you're going to just gas within a round or two. All of that matters, and the more you stay in it and the more you are able to take fights and have three or four or five a year, it makes a huge difference in how you perform in your next fight. And the fact that she hasn't had that, I think it's going to be very significant.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of fighters that will suffer from ring rust, especially at the UFC level, because obviously that's the big leagues. That's the biggest spotlight. So when you make that big return, you want to be special. But there are a few fighters, and I think the biggest example, and I'm only putting this example out there because I'm actually going to pick Ronda, but Dominic Cruz.
Yeah.
And he was gone for almost 3 years, and then he just finished Mizugaki in like, I think, 60 seconds. So yeah. It just kind of depends on how you bounce back. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen. But
Lesnar, of course, he cheated when he came back.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, I don't know, though, man. Amanda Nunes, don't sleep on her. She is – she has what is Ronda's kryptonite, and that is a striker that is hard to get a hold of. Because right. Ronda – I mean, Ronda's whole game is let me get you the clinch. That's her whole game. Because once she gets you in the clinch, you know, her judo takes over, and it's over. Once she gets you on the ground – it's really hard to defend.
And I would hope
Ronda
she would
Rousey.
Go straight to that. I mean, if I don't say she should completely steer away from standing up, because at some point she's going to have to face someone who has better striking than her. But,
yeah.
But I think she needs to stick to her bread and butter on this first fight coming back.
But I read something where in the Holly Holm fight, Holm outlanded her significant strikes 38-17.
Yeah.
Which is not even close.
Yeah.
And when you got somebody like Nunes who can fight and who can strike, excuse me, It doesn't bode well if you can't catch her. If you can't get inside and get to that clinch to get that leverage to make that judo throw and get her on the ground.
A real long night for Ronda.
And do your arm bar. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I tell you, as much as I think Ronda has a chance just because of how good she is, at the same time, man, I don't know if she can, after a year layoff, beat somebody with the caliber of Amanda Nunes. So I'm going Nunes in the fight.
Wow, I'm impressed.
Yeah.
Because I think it's kind of gutsy even with the long layoff. So that's we'll find out tomorrow. It'll be real interesting to see.
You're going Ronda?
I'm going Ronda for sure.
Okay. Any other fight you're looking forward to?
I do want to see the Dominic Cruz and Cody Garbrandt fight and the Neil Magny, Johnny Hendricks fight. But obviously, with Johnny Hendricks missing weight, that's kind of takes some of the luster out of it. But yeah.
Who you got in the Cruz-Garbrandt fight?
I'm picking Cruz.
Are you?
For sure.
I guess we're not agreeing.
Yeah, I'm picking Cruz. I'm going to
pick Garbrandt as well.
I think he's in his head. I think
really?
He's in his head. Yep.
That's the thing about Cruz, man. You got to catch him. You may be able to knock dudes out, but a lot of that is loading up. And when you load up and there's somebody faster than you on the other end, you got to catch him. And that's going to be a difficult proposition for him.
I think it's going to be difficult.
But if he lands, it could be night-night.
100%.
That Freddy Cruz is fast, too. I've seen him in a lot of movies.
Freddy Cruz.
On that note... we enjoyed it. We brought it to you, and we'll do it again tomorrow. Tomorrow, Christian's tailgate in the Heights at White Oak. Mario Ellie will join me for 3 hours. Why don't you join us and be a part of the show? We're here Monday through Friday, 1 to 4, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Behind the delivery trucks that keep your life stocked, thousands of employees at BP go to work every day. People bringing a new offshore production platform online. People making our refineries capable of more, like making renewable diesel from agricultural waste. People trading and shipping fuels to our customers. And people helping truckers fill up and get maintenance at our convenient locations. They're part of almost 300,000 jobs BP supports across the country. Learn more at bp.com/investing in America.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.